Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Andrew, do you ever have watch regret?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. What's the last time you had watch regret?
I don't know. Be on the spot with such a important question. I don't know, but I know I have. All right.
Yeah. I had a major amount of it last night because I was excited to tune into Telemundo for Brazil and Argentina, more of which later, but it left a rather bad taste in the mouth. Yeah. Much like Messi's Fernet and Coke, it would probably taste great if you're an Argentinian fan, but we'll get to that. And I just feel that I left something on the table that I didn't watch Canada hosting Jamaica. It just wouldn't have occurred to me. I'm still in the Canadian era of good feelings. So I assume they'll be better. I assume they'll win. I got it wrong. It was a cracking game in Toronto. A devastating one if you're a Canadian men's national team fan hoping to continue the Herdman era. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. And so here I am with watch regret.
And that game only created maybe the second most buzz of the evening in CONCACAF. Yeah. Oh, JJ, the CONCACAF was just effing rocking last night.
Was it
that
really?
That place was rowdy. The police were called. Oh, the CONCACAF was spectacular. They're going to be talking about it for years, what was going on in that place last night.
The CONCACAF is amazing most nights, but it feels like it had a night that all the patrons will remember.
Oh, the CONCACAF. This region delivered last night. This region absolutely delivered yesterday. I think it was Nico Cantor on Twitter. He said something to the effect of like, I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, people who are annoyed by these international breaks just don't get it. Like they're so Premier League centric or whatever. That's okay. We are oftentimes too, but I've said this before, you'll never hear me complain about these international breaks because this one has wound up being so eventful in so many different ways. And last night was just a chef's kiss cherry on top with some of what went down.
I think Nico has a point, but I also think that it's not fair for him to have a go at people that are complaining that they don't get it.
Here's the actual tweet. I don't want to put words in his mouth. He has the quote here, quoting like an unknown speaker. I hate the international break. And then him speaking, tell me you only watch European football without telling me you only watch European football. Today has been, and then a series of popcorn emojis.
No question. And if you are like the worst mistake you could make, as a maybe you're a newly minted soccer fan. You've only been a soccer fan for 5 years, right? You live in you live on the West Coast or the East Coast, and you know, you tune into all the Premier League, and that's how you your brain is wired, and you think, I'm going to follow England in qualification. I know all the players,
right?
And I'll sit in a total mistake. Also, good luck trying to follow them. The split system where when and I don't want to shill for ESPN, but you know, when ESPN had all the UEFA qualifying on Plus, it was brilliant. It was class. You had your one-stop shop and they'd always have some live game on. Now it's split between Fubo, between FS2. If Ireland's on FS2 one week, it'll be on Fubo the next, or you don't even know. So it's hard for people to watch. And it's hard for them to know as well, like in CONMEBOL, CONCACAF, you know, where am I watching this? Like, it's split everywhere. So I don't want to kill people for that. But you're definitely making a mistake if you just focus. Like, I had an hour of just great enjoyment watching a 0-0 between Italy and the Ukraine. Like, it was fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. And still fairly mainstream UEFA qualifying. So I think it's good to get weird. And there's nothing weirder than CONCACAF.
It got weird last night. Now, we will talk about the game you mentioned was unbelievable, Canada and Jamaica. We'll talk about that and some of the ramifications of it, because that's incredible what happened there. Obviously,
and we will talk about Brazil and Argentina as well.
100%, because obviously, look, what happened on the field is of note, significant note. It's Brazil and Argentina, and Brazil doing things that we have literally never seen before, for the worse. But also what happened in the stands last night. There's a lot to dive into with that as well. But let's start, JJ. Let's start in CONCACAF. And so it's late last night, and I'm just kind of like, I guess maybe I had a little bit of watch regret last night, to answer your question, because I'm monitoring Twitter and following Mexico-Honduras as intently as you can without watching it. And I couldn't take it anymore because the tension was just building. Mexico scored in the, 43rd minute. So it's 1-0. And now Honduras are kind of clinging on for dear life to try to keep this lead and prevent this from going extra time. And the tension is building and building. And like, I'm following the tweets of everyone who's locked in on it, talking about how like you could feel it in that place. And I was like, finally it hit me like a bolt of lightning. I was like, oh, that's right, Tudin. The Tudin Network. So I never think, like, my go-to is not to like watch in Spanish, but that's what's free. That's what's out there. And so it hit me. I was like, that's right, I've done this before. And so I watched like the last, I forget how many minutes of the game in Spanish. So they get to, let's just fast forward right to the good stuff, to just CONCACAF. If CONCACAF were a person, this was CONCACAF just stripping off all its clothes and saying, here I am, love me, this is me. And the game, so they get to the 90th minute, and look, it's no secret how important Mexico is to this region and to the tournaments and events that go on in this region.
Hash cow.
Right. Like, and we know, like, Jerry World is going to be the site for some of these major upcoming events, Nations League, Copa America, whatever. And we know what Mexico's presence does to that place. Bang, 100,000 Mexican fans.
They turn it
overnight
into Geraldo World.
Right. Like, no, we don't, doesn't matter what the price is. One ticket, $800. Yeah, sure, whatever. Once in a lifetime opportunity, even though they'll do it 1,000 times in their life. But like, we know how important they are. And so in a moment like this, you can't help but watch what's going on through those Mexican tinted glasses and just thinking, they may not. Are they not going to be present for this event that has kind of been based around their presence? And the clock is ticking and ticking. The tension is building. And they get to stoppage time. And without any real significant happenings in the second half, suddenly, bang, 9 minutes up on the board. And it's like, oh, here we go. CONCACAF, they're not going to let this happen. They're not going to let Mexico blow this opportunity without at least them having a hand in trying to help them up. 9 minutes up on the board. USMNT Takes had a funny tweet. He said, kind of crazy that Jamaica versus Canada had both penalties and red cards in regular time, but finished in less time than the Mexico-Honduras match did. CONCACAF made it too obvious this time. Hard pill to swallow for Honduran fans. Money talks, though. I thought I don't know. Like, we're just podcasters who are speculating, but they throw 9 minutes up. But wait a sec, JJ, because it gets worse. The 9 minutes was bonkers enough, but then the 9 minutes comes and goes. Mexico hasn't scored. Now what do we do? Uh-oh. Keep playing. And two more minutes go by. Finally, Edson Álvarez scores in the 11th minute of stoppage time, inexplicably. Minutes that were added on inexplicably. I don't think anything really happened in those 9 minutes that would say, we need two more. I will forever wonder till my last breath, when I'm on my deathbed, hopefully I'm 97 years old and my generations of Gunlings are around me. And they ask me, what are your regrets? My regret will be, I want to know why. Why were those extra 2 minutes added to the Nations League quarterfinal between Mexico and Honduras? It was amazing. And I'd also want to know this. What if Mexico hadn't scored? How long would they have gone before they finally said, okay, we tried, but we have to end this?
You know me, I don't enjoy the conspiracy theories of supporters in football because I think most of them come from a weird place on the internet and people's brains, and they see bias everywhere. But that does not mean that there's a general atmosphere, shall we say, a general ambiance set amongst officialdom in CONCACAF, where it's kind of just said when Mexico play and they're in a bit of bother, you give them as much rope as you possibly can.
And good Lord,
they sure did. And like, it doesn't have to be a directive. There doesn't have to be money changing hands. There doesn't have to be like files and emails found on the dark web that say exactly how the conspiracy was conducted. No, it can be just a culture. It can be just like, you know, people getting penalties at Old Trafford and Liverpool and Man United in their respective homes, getting, you know, the kind of, that's a 50-50 tackle, but United will get it, but Liverpool will get it, but Arsenal will get it because they're a big side. That's not a written down conspiracy of the, I'm not saying it happens right now, but I'm saying in the past, that's just something the referees might have felt the pressure of. It's just something that's in the air, and it's in the air with Mexico. It certainly was. Now, I did not watch this game because you were asking me as I was going to bed. I'd done 90 minutes, 90 tough minutes of Rodrigo de Paul falling over the place. So, you know, I I'd had enough of soccer. I was like, I can't do much more. I can't do it. I can't do it. So I went to bed. So I didn't see this game. But what you're suggesting to me and the picture you're painting is that a lot of rope was given to Mexico.
Well, I texted you because it was in a moment where I was in a fit of rage. And I know that there were others like me who were also watching on Tudin. So this game where Honduras had been red carded after all this happened. So now they're playing a man down in extra time. And they're just clinging. They're just hanging on. They're doing what they can. They're playing for their lives in this game. We know what this means to Mexico, but good Lord, Honduras are not in this position very often where they can qualify for Copa America, and they still might, but them getting to a Nations League semi, qualifying for Copa America, doing it all in one night in the Azteca. I mean, this would be one of the most significant nights in the history of Honduran football. And they're hanging on, and you feel the tension of the weird 11 minutes of stoppage time that had just happened and Mexico scoring. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of extra time, Tudin goes to a commercial break. While play is happening, nothing. There was no stoppage. All of a sudden, bang! Commercial. Suddenly,
I didn't understand that when you texted me that. I was like, "What is he talking about?"
So I went crazy. I said, "Are you what? Is this just my TV? I need to know what's going on." So I just put in Tudin on Twitter, and everybody who was watching there was like, "What are they thinking? Someone needs to get fired for this." Like, it was everybody, and so but like. Because of the atmosphere of suspicion around it, I thought this was going to be, you know, how every like Law and Order episode, JJ, there's always some scene of a guy being like, all right, well, let's just check the security tapes. And somebody's like, we did. Those 2 minutes are missing. And I was like, are we witnessing the missing 2 minutes? Is this break happening and we're going to come back and Mexico are going to be lining up some penalty while 400 players are being let off the pitch with red cards? Like, what is happening while we're gone here? Sure enough, when we came back, Mexico were lining up a free kick from just outside the box that wound up going wide. But that's the atmosphere. You don't trust what's going on. And like you were saying, I don't believe in the conspiracy stuff either, usually. But in this region, it's not unfounded to believe, because corruption has been such a part of what's gone on in this region. So when so we're sort of trained to recognize when something smells bad, there's usually a reason for it. 11 minutes of stoppage time when 9 were on the board, which was already weird, and nothing happened to add to it. Like, it smells bad. Like, you're watching it happening in real time, and living in this region and watching soccer in this region my whole life, you're trained to just watch it suspiciously. This was all suspicious. So no one scores. It goes to penalties. And I thought it in my head. I swear to you, I thought it in my head. How much you want to bet a keeper will be off the line at some point when a penalty is saved in this shootout. And sure enough, not once, but twice, the Honduran keeper was made two saves, both on, who was it? Huerta, I think it was, that could have tied it up late in the penalty shootout. Both of them retaken for him being off the line. And I'm not saying they're wrong calls. I'm not like, the second one definitely was. The first one I'd have to see again. But like, you just knew like this was going to happen. And sure enough, then Mexico goes on and they win it. Weird scenes afterwards. Honduran players were furious. Obviously there was a lot. It was weird because the win was strange for Mexico. It was obviously hugely important, but I think, I don't know. It felt like they all knew this was, we might've gotten away with one here, but then they're kind of like talking trash to the Honduran players as like Honduras is angry about it. It all just felt weird. It was a good old CONCACAF night going on at the Azteca yesterday. Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah. I feel for the Hondurans. I really do. And let's be honest about it. This is a country that really punches above its weight in its region and often gives really, really tough games to the power. So I'm sorry. I am sorry to hear. Now, as hilarious as it is to us, I am sorry to hear that they've had this pain inflicted on them. And they will be, no doubt, absolutely brimming with conspiracy theories and... Yeah. When you were texting me so excitedly, I knew something is amiss here.
Something's
not good. Something's rotten in CONCACAF right now. So yeah.
Yeah, and you know it's funny too because I was just saying yesterday when we recorded, I was just talking about how like I don't know. I kind of want Mexico to go through, and look, sure enough, the U.S. and Mexico, if they meet in the Nations League, it'll now be in the final. They're not paired up in the semis. So, if that happens, I will be so happy because that will be so much fun and we'll be so up for that. So it's all good. However, your true feelings, I think, do come out when you are in it and you're watching a game and you're invested in it. And I'm not going to lie, for whatever I said yesterday about Mexico and being more excited when they're involved, JJ, I couldn't help it. Like, I was just rooting instinctually for Honduras. It was so raw and genuine. Like I wanted them to do it so badly because it felt like they had done it. They deserved it to me. So I don't know, maybe those are in fact my true feelings, but if we get a US-Mexico matchup in the Nations League final or at any point in Copa America, oh my God, it'll be amazing. But I just felt, I felt bad for Honduras. I just really did. It's tough. Tough one to watch for them.
I mean, look, you hate Mexico, let's be honest.
In football.
Yes, football. Must be very careful.
I love the people and the country, but...
Are you better? Yeah. Look. It's one of those where I naturally go for the underdog anyway, and I do not like... Actually, I take that back. In terms of our podcast, I need Mexico to be good. I need them to be, if not good, always against us in a game of relevance. So, yeah. I'm sorry if I know that hurts.
Yeah.
Honduras and a lot of other countries, but that's the way I feel.
So that's what was going on upstairs last night in the Coca Cafe. Then you go downstairs into the basement and you had Jamaica and Canada. This one in Toronto, where Canada does not lose. They smashed Jamaica there just not long ago, 4-0. And incredibly, Jamaica come back, they turn around the aggregate, and they win this one 3-2, and they advance on away goals. The aggregate was tied up. They advance to the semifinals. They book their place in next summer's Copa America, while Canada, meanwhile, are going to have to do it the hard way. And boy, JJ, you were saying before about in this era of Canadian football, you kind of just expect them to do it. I got news for you. That era of good feelings in Canadian football, it is over. Now, it doesn't mean that it can't be reincarnated at some point, but like right now, if you look at the state of what's going on there, I mean, all the momentum of what came out of last year's World Cup qualifying cycle, that is gone. Really disappointing showing in Qatar, infighting with the Federation, losing to the U.S.'s C team in the Gold Cup, losing their manager, now a failure to qualify for the Nations League semifinals, all at home, where they're never supposed to lose. Like, you talk about not capitalizing on a moment. Canada, what's going on there this past year since the World Cup ended? Oh man, it feels like they have really squandered their moment.
Yeah, and I don't want to criticize the players too much because, okay, the defending certainly wasn't always the best. They got caught in transition like far too many times last night, particularly on the second Shamar Nicholson goal. But, you know, I know this as a fact. You cannot have the levels of dysfunction that they possess within their organization, within Canada Soccer, and weather the storm on the field for very long. Eventually, that all coagulates and comes together. And so it did last night. Just a couple of things on this. Well, more than a couple of things on this game. I have been an Andre Blake skeptic. Everyone knows it. Mostly from what I've seen in MLS.
Yeah, you've been wrong for a while, but continue.
No, I mean, I think I've been a victim of when I'm tuning in, he's often conceded a goal where I'm like, if he's as good as everyone says he is, he gets to that. I'm thinking the Messi drive from distance against Inter Miami this year, like from all of like 45 yards, and it somehow bounces past him into the net. He did concede two goals last night, but easily in the first half in Toronto, he could have conceded four. That's not a lie. These were point blank saves. And even on the first Canadian goal, he makes a brilliant save. It just loops up over and bounces into the net. There's nothing he could do. He stood on his head in that first half. He showed the finest proponent of the kick save you've ever seen. Like getting his feet wasn't with his hands. It was mostly with his feet. He was brilliant, Andrew. And the fact that he limited Canada to two goals was the platform for Jamaica to go on and be able to win this tie. That's just a fact. Canada could have been home and hosed by halftime. They were not. Shamar Nicholson looked every inch an old school center forward. Again, please don't read me the wrong way when I say these things, especially when you say it about a player of color. You automatically are cast as some dinosaur who needs educating. But he showed just great skill, yes, but incredible power. Like his first goal that he drove home to get them back into the tie, as clean a strike as you're going to see. He absolutely leathers it. He tears the cover off the ball. He it strikes it so well. And Jamaica were really good in transition, really really good in transition. And Nicholson led that line brilliantly. And Bobby Decordova Reed's penalty. I mean, it's unlucky. It's a handball. But at the same time, I think in this era, it's definitely a penalty. Just is. And he rolls it home so calmly. And the sense of shock that Jamaica left in the stadium was amazing. Do you know what else was amazing?
What's that?
So Ishmael Kone's goal. Great flicked on header. Liked it. Liked the general move for Canada. The ball barely hits the net. It just hits the net. And the pyrotechnics go off. Did Canada wire the net to the pyrotechnics?
Like you're saying, the timing was that incredible?
It was immediate.
Okay, I got to go back.
Unless
and watch
they've hired an intern with his finger on the button, at all moments, ready to do it. The ball hits the net, and simultaneously, whoosh, the dry ice cannon goes off behind the net, right behind the rigging of the net. Now, you know me, I'm obsessed with stanchions and all that stuff. So I'm like, if they've done that, that means an offside goal, like an absolute belter,
will put these things off and then it's called back. Like it's the ultimate wah, wah.
Yeah.
But anyway, just a side note. Another note from last night that struck me. Yeah, and you're talking about the era of good feelings ending. Has it ever? So they hadn't been beaten since 2010 in Toronto.
Ooh.
What? 13, what? 12, do the math for me, Andrew. How many years is that? 13 years. What? That's, oh my God. And now it happens. 2010, the commentator said on the one broadcast. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is a stunning loss for Canada. And again, I don't want to give the flowers to Jamaica, but actually let me do that. Me and you have had this conversation a while, and I'm wondering if Hal Grimson is the manager that's gonna make this team what it should be. Like Bailey, Damari Gray, Bobby Decordova Reed, Ethan Pinnock. Like there's a spine. You know, there's something you can put something together there. You've got enough there. Maybe the quality isn't throughout the, if they were to select a 22-man squad, maybe it's not all there. There's enough to be decent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he played 4-4-2 last night. I'm not sure. But I feel like a manager with his background, yeah, being Icelandic, you know, they're going to be hard to beat. They're going to be organized. And if he can get them countering like they did last night, are we seeing a new force in the CONCACAF Cafe?
I think we should be. And because you are right, I agree that the talent is there and kind of has been for a little bit. And for whatever reason, they couldn't put it together.
But there's enough, right?
There's enough. Like there are names that you just mentioned, arguably MLS's best goalkeeper, like you said before. Like there are talented players there. And like it shouldn't be, we shouldn't be sitting here stunned that Canada lost necessarily. Like it should start to kind of normalize that, yeah, Jamaica is going to be a tough out. Like they're part of this now. I think that should start to become more of a normal feeling throughout this region. Sure. And I think maybe that's what last night was kind of ushering in. So yeah, Canada though, like, I mean, they are also one of the co-hosts of this coming World Cup in 2026. These, you know, we talk so much about what these years mean to the U.S. of trying to get ready for that moment. Canada are also in preparation mode for that. They are now not going to be in the Nations League semifinals, which is hugely important because, like we've said, there's no qualification campaign for these host nations. So these games of import are few and far between. Now they got to do it the hard way to get into Copa America. They have to qualify for that tournament. They have to. So they still have one more chance. There's one more trapdoor where they're going to have the one-off. I don't know if those matchups have been announced yet, but there's going to be a single match playoff, basically.
The fact they get another shot at this is such a blessing to them.
Well, they're
such
six, a blessing. Yeah, six CONCACAF nations are going to get in. The four who qualified for the Nations League semis, and then two others. So we'll see. Canada, I would think, would be a front runner for it. But the way that things have been going for them right now, it's all bets are off. I don't know. So that is so important, though. They need to be playing meaningful football next summer. They cannot squander this any longer with some of these prominent names that they have in their prime right now. These guys have got to be playing important games. That tournament's a must. Nations League semis, it's going to be Mexico versus Panama and the U.S. versus Jamaica. March 21st, I think, is the semis, and I think the 24th will be the final. So mark your calendars right now for those, because that has proven to be a lot of fun. And the U.S., of course, have been victorious in the previous two iterations. They'll be going for the three-peat with this one. Let's see, JJ, we'll get to, you know, I had some stuff on the U.S. with Dest, if any feelings have changed or anything like that.
We can do that quickly. No, yeah. I've calmed down significantly.
Yeah.
And I think generally people will be kind. People know his value. I thought the manager, who doesn't always speak well, did speak well. We move on. I unless this becomes a pattern in his club career as well, I think I've he'll know he was an ass, right? He'll know that. And I think I think that's it. And I don't, again, it's footballers are selfish and there's none of them are going to think, unless Scally starts whipping in crosses and like, I'm not saying that he can't, but I starts beating players with the sauce that Sergiño Dest does. I think Greg has a very clear idea in his mind what he wants. And I don't see him pivoting from either of those fullbacks anytime soon. So no, I think.
Yeah.
Move on.
You're probably right. I would say one thing that Dest has going for him right now is the old cliche, time heals all wounds. If the U.S. were playing again next week or in 2 weeks, then it would still be fresh.
Clamor for him not to be involved would be huge.
Right. But like, we are not going to see that. There's going to be a January camp, which is going to be MLS heavy. None of the European guys will be a part of that. And then we'll see them for the Nations League. Not till I think that's the next thing after January camp in March. What is that? 4 months from now? Almost 5 months from now? Like, so yeah, he'll be suspended for the semi. I don't know that it's a given if the U.S. get to the final that he'll be ushered right back in. That may not be the case if the U.S. play well. I don't think that's a given. But I do think all this talk of banishment and that was all silliness even in the moment. But I think the fact that there's so many months between now and the next time we're going to see these guys, that will have died down. I think that's working for him.
Yeah, but JJ, unless he acts the fool for PSV.
Yeah. But like I said, this was, in fact, this 2-1 defeat versus Trinidad, but qualifying and going through. That was, in fact, the last time that the U.S. will play in the calendar year of 2023. So, and look, when we get into our late December pods where we do a little bit more reflecting, we can go deeper here. But just now, knowing that this is it, we've seen them now for an entire year. Can you fill in the blank for me? 2023 was a blank year for the U.S. men's national team.
2023 was a disruptive. Disruptive. I felt there was way too much non-soccer stuff that just kept rumbling out of the World Cup.
Yeah, mine is kind of a similar vein. I said 2023 was a weird year because, I mean, look, the most important thing of the year was probably the Nations League and the U.S. Like, that's when everybody brought their A squads and the U.S. looked awesome there. It was one of their most impressive ever wins against Mexico. But, like, that momentum slowed. You had the Gold Cup. Granted, it was the C team, but it was largely disappointing. You know, some of the friendlies were disappointing. You know, going they against were. Germany... Like, and by the way, the Germans, we said that the U.S. looked like their get right game. The Germans have not gotten right since then.
No.
So that
doesn't reflect great on us.
Makes it even a little more disappointing. Obviously, the Reyna-Berhalter controversy, even though it feels like that is now finally settling, that will reverberate forever. Like that happened this year, essentially. That dominated headlines this year. Berhalter's rehiring, whether you hated it, loved it, we can all agree that it divided opinion in a way this year that few things can in this sport quite like that. Getting Balogun was great. Obviously, that was a huge get for the U.S. That happened this year. But if you look across the team of some of their key players, like some of the key players for this team kind of stagnated in their club careers. You know, Pulisic at Chelsea went terribly. And we're seeing now, okay, maybe he'll do better at AC Milan, but that's still in its early days. Reyna, not really playing much at Dortmund. Dest obviously didn't have a club. Now he's at PSV. Aronson kind of bounced around. Even Tyler Adams, injuries. You know, he hasn't gotten his start yet at Bournemouth. Matt Turner now moved to a club where you thought he'd start. He's the back. I mean, it was kind of a weird year. I don't know. Next year they'll have Copa America next year. So that's going to be a big one. Hopefully hopefully better next year than what we got this year. I hope that's not asking too much, but we'll see. All right, we'll go ahead. We'll take a break, JJ. We'll come back on the other side. Some important news regarding merch. So we'll have that for you. We're going to talk a little bit Brazil-Argentina, a little bit on MLS postseason, which resumes this coming weekend. Still a lot to do here on Caught Offside. Don't go anywhere.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare.
PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Oh, back now, Caught Offside. Thanksgiving Eve. I don't know when you're listening to this. I don't even know when we're releasing this, to be honest. But Thanksgiving, from when we're recording this, Thanksgiving is tomorrow. Boy, this was always one of my, this was one of the great party nights of the year.
But apparently back in the day, going out the night before Thanksgiving was, I've only done that really once. Oh, no, I've done it a few times. I did it once and I was horribly hungover for Thanksgiving Day and I didn't enjoy myself. So I've tried to curb that thing. But
yeah.
I was out one night, one belter of everyone was out. I just arrived in the country. And so I'm out with my friend and he's seeing all his kind of high school friends, people he used to know. And I didn't know anyone. I'm just like, what's going on? It's like friends reunited over here, and I'm just got off a boat.
Yeah. I had one of these nights on a night before Thanksgiving once. I can't really give you details. All I know is, at one point, the bouncer told my friend to make sure he kept an eye on me.
Whoa!
So I know it was that kind of night.
I say whoa. That is a common thing for most people, but for you that feels
is
like
it?
That feels like yeah
keep an eye like on your friend here.
Exactly. When I hear it about you, it does sound weird because you're not that guy.
Oh, no. I don't know if you know me quite as well as you think you do. I have a real dark side.
I've heard rumors of Andrew Unleashed, but you've pretty leashed for the last while. Speaking of a bright side, Andrew, perfect segue. Merch is at a point where we can say we're excited, right?
We've talked about it obviously for years, and I think many people probably had given up and thought they're just going to keep saying this and stringing us along. The link is not active yet, so I don't want to necessarily direct anyone anywhere. No. Trust us, when it is, you will know, and it'll be plastered all over the place. But what I'll tell you is, it is now as real as it has ever been. I've seen the shirts. We've met with the distributor. And now we are in the ultimate final stages. So keep your eyes open over the next week. Make sure you listen to the podcast because we'll have details for it. I would think within the next week, probably early next week on our first pod, our Liverpool Man City recap pod. I think we'll have details for you.
We'll tell you exactly how it's going to go down, how it's going to roll out. I would say I'm excited for it. I'm excited just to get something out there for you guys. But know this, I will want to do more. So there will be more in the new year as well. But this will be our first one, which is always groundbreaking and exciting.
Yeah, I do think that's important to note for people. This is kind of an initial test run. We have not done anything like this before. We're excited about doing it because I think it'll be cool. And I think the stuff looks great. But it should be reminded to people that this is a party of two handling this. And I think that that's been some of the reasons why this has taken longer than expected is because there are details to this. We are not professionals in that line of work. We are good at, I think, doing a show, coming up with things to talk about, having angles on things, business, marketing, those sorts of things are don't necessarily come as natural. And so I think that is where we're at now. And
I think I've done okay in my role so far. Like the fact we have a registered business and that we can launch like this and that I didn't have to go, I could go straight away and you know, be able to fill out things and like have an EIN number. All that stuff is down to me. And I will take the credit for that. But I will also take the blame for the delay in things, because it's like Andrew said, sometimes it's like, wow, you know, and it's wow because we've got such amazing listeners, and it's wow because we've got such a hardcore group of listeners, and we want to do something good for you guys. And I just don't want it to be any kind of rough t-shirt with like it's something daubed on it. I want it to be nice and something you want to wear. So that, like, even the design part of it, you know, was took longer than I thought, because we don't know how to, we've rebranded literally within a year. We've rebranded, and I'm proud of that though. And so listen, just keep, you got to keep listening to the podcast. Early next week, we're going to tell you how it's going to go down. Bearing in mind it's a two-man operation, you should expect that to be built baked into what we do. But I'm excited for you know what I'm excited for, Andrew?
What's
for the first person to get their t-shirt and to be like in some other part of the country wearing it at their bar, or wearing it on a date even, or wearing it in the house or to the gym or wherever, and taking a picture and sending it to us. That's what I'm excited about.
That will be nice. But I do like that it is important that you mentioned there the missteps should be baked into the expectations. I think that's funny.
That is not what I said. What I said was, look, we're not exactly a well-oiled machine. Come here. We're brilliant. What we've done is brilliant. And I'm proud of us. And we've been together almost a decade. We'll be
and still love each other.
I still care for you deeply.
I've only hated you twice during this time, during all of our years together.
Sometimes I secretly hate you. But
that worries me, because mine, I've been loud and out there, you know, all the times. The fact that you've been hiding them worries me.
No. My mine is like a wave of hatred, and it lasts tops 20 minutes.
I need moments and incidents. I need to know what I did.
When I take the initiative to do something and I work hard in it, and you give me a face, an unsure face.
You have specifics. I need them.
I don't. It's happened so many times. I throw out an idea, or I have actually done something.
Oh, you've essed on so many of my ideas. How dare you?
All right. Okay. Anyways, merch, guys, get excited.
That's not okay. The spirit of any of this.
No. I'm thankful for our relationship. I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm thankful for that, and I apologize for the waves of hatred I have towards you.
From now on, I don't want them hidden. I need them out there, because otherwise, now I'm going to be insecure and wondering.
I'm going to make a signal, right? Every time you're getting,
just say that you say. Just no, I want no. you to say to me during the next time it happens. You wanted to know those moments when I hate you. We're in one now. I'll say okay. Okay.
I'm going to do this.
Why?
Symbolizing wave. I'm making a W with my fingers with my two hands. That will signify wave of hatred.
Okay. I'll tell you what, there was a wave of hatred going on at the Maracanã last night between Brazil and Argentina. Jesus. This was a rather eventful 1-0 win for the current World Cup champs. They go to Brazil. They win. Brazil had never lost at home in World Cup qualifying until last night. They have also now lost three consecutive World Cup qualifiers. What is going on with Brazil right now? Three straight and a home defeat in CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying. They're sixth in the table. And by the way, they will be until next September when qualifying resumes. I mean, this is, and we can talk about the stuff in the stands, but I figure we do the on-field stuff first. I know you were locked into this one, and this was a bad game. 42 fouls in this game, a red card eventually on Joe Linton. Obviously Rodrigo De Paul was a part of that, like you said.
Oh my god,
on the ground the whole game.
I mean,
he's the most Atletico Madrid player I've ever seen in my entire life.
He is the epitome. He is the incarnate of an S house. But he's very effective. He's super effective footballer. I just feel like every second he would end up clutching his face. Now, there's a couple of times he got slapped in the face. A couple of times I would call one of them a gentle caress. Like, no more than that. And he's over on the ground, rolling around. It was also frantic and frenetic. It was like they were trying to kick each other, but pulling out at the last minute. Like, there was no shape to this game. None whatsoever. It was complete and utter dirge. If it wasn't Brazil at the Maracanã, if it wasn't Argentina visiting, if it wasn't the reigning world champions visiting,
you would turn it off. You would say, I don't know what this is. I can't watch it. You watch the highlights, the excellent highlights that Telemundo put out with no commentary. I love them. They're just so good in HD on YouTube. Watch those highlights. There's nothing. Except, I would say, Otamendi's towering header is one of my favorite headers I've seen in a long time. It's absolutely brilliant. The desire gets up above two defenders right up there and just buries one past Alisson right into the top corner. Stunning goal. It's a really stunning goal. But on the field, Messi has never been more peripheral in a game. I think it's one of the worst games I've ever seen him play in. His most amount of action was before the game, rounding up the Argentinian players to bring them in off the field while the violence continued in the stands, saying, no, we're not doing this, bringing them back in. And the next bit of action was he got the most intense groin hamstring massage I've ever seen right in the middle of the game. And anybody who knows anything, that's not going to help. It'll help maybe for like a few seconds while you're rubbing it. But the guy was not fit.
Yeah.
Did not look fit. And it's lucky he's in his off season now because he needs to recover big time.
So I think that they are saying that today, that he does have a groin injury. He said that the stop-start nature to the beginning, so he warmed up. Then there was this 27-minute delay, which we'll talk about. Then they came back out again. He said that did not help. I think part of this, look, the fact that it was Brazil-Argentina and it was his last game of the year, and now he has time to really rest and recover. I think he kind of put it on the line because of the grandness of the occasion and the fact that he knows it's not like he's going back to club football right away. He does have time here. In another circumstance, I don't know that he would have tried to play through it because it did seem like he was affected by it. I don't think there's any doubt. Yeah.
He couldn't move properly. Also, like right before the game, what kind of an introduction to a game is, or how does it set the tone where you've got your goalkeeper in Martinez trying to get into the stands to separate some supporters? There didn't look like there was any segregation whatsoever. None. This is from Tim Vickery's report. It all began as the national anthems were being played. This reportedly led to scuffles between rival groups of fans. Things escalated when the local police launched a baton charge on the Argentine fans, and the situation quickly got out of control. Yellow seats were flying through the air as the supporters fought back. There were fans with blood streaming down their faces, and as the Argentine supporters retreated, some Brazilians who had nothing to do with the fighting were caught up in the confusion and went diving over the crash barriers and onto the pitch to get away from the conflict. This could have been disastrous, absolutely disastrous, and it wasn't. I mean, it was bad enough what happened.
It was pretty, it was really ugly. And the thing that's interesting to me, you said the way the fans were kind of, they looked like they were among each other. Like you could see, we're accustomed to seeing like the away fans in the Premier League. There's clear delineation. There's unused rows of seats. There's security. Like this was blurry. Like obviously there was that large pocket of Argentinian fans in the corner next to the goal, but like it was blurry between them and it was hard to tell where the Brazilians ended and the Argentinians began. And Tim Vickery said the visiting support is usually placed high up in one of the corners with the seats below left vacant to ensure an adequate separation. None of that happened on Tuesday. And so the Argentina fans were behind one of the goals directly next to the organized group of Brazil followers. ANATORG, Brazil's Association of Organized Supporters, had warned before the game that this was a mistake. Their words were not heeded.
Ah, for God's sake.
Why do this? Why play with fire like this? And now look, ultimately, like, I don't want to give the people who were involved a pass. Like, you still want people to behave like people. But like, why play with fire in this way? Why make it so easy for something like this to happen?
Yeah, but we know what happens when mass amount of people are in a place all together, that it's not, I'm sorry, it's not always, the most rational of human instinct that leads the day. It's not. People get involved in stuff. There's drink involved from outside. There may be drugs involved from outside. I'm not saying that's the case right now, but huge amount, vast swathes of people put together. And when they're rival teams, like you can't just, when you've got a system in place and the supporters are telling you what's safe and what works, do that.
Right.
But so that was the backdrop to it.
It was tense. There was a real tension when they kicked off. And the game felt that way. It was just not, it was just a bad game. And
it was terrible. Absolutely dreadful. Really, really just shapeless, frantic, like the worst kind of, the worst kind of game you can watch and the most dispiriting kind of atmosphere surrounding it.
One thing I wonder about Brazil on the field in terms of what's going on with them right now. So I do feel that Neymar needs to be brought up here because I'm kind of wondering, like, does this team not know how to play when he's not there? Like if you operate off of the official designation that World Cup matches decided on penalties, technically those go down as draws. I know that's silliness, but let's just go with that because that technically they're draws. So since Brazil's loss to Argentina in the 2021 Copa America final, Brazil have played 16 matches with Neymar in the lineup. They've won 13 and they've drawn 3. They haven't lost any. Again, asterisk over the draw versus Croatia because they kind of lost it in penalties, but technically it's a draw. They haven't lost in 16 games with Neymar in the lineup. Since he gets hurt in the 44th minute versus Uruguay, they go on to lose that game. They lose their next one against Colombia, and now they lose this one at home against Argentina. They had never lost before at home in World Cup qualifying until this. In those aforementioned 16 games, Neymar had registered a goal and or assist in 13 of them. 11 goals, 9 assists. I mean, you watch this and you can't help but wonder, are they too reliant on this guy? And they're just in some kind of period right now where they're trying to figure out how to play without him. That's what the statistics feel like they tell you.
Yes, they've also got an interim manager who's double jobbing between Fluminense and the Brazilian national team. I don't think that's helpful. I don't know why it popped up on my timeline. I mean, why wouldn't it? I mean, my timeline is full of kind of soccer related stuff, but for somebody was commenting about Neymar or Brazil and the goal against the what they thought would be the winning goal against Croatia came up. Mm. Like, he's so good in it. Mm-hmm. You think of that game.
It would have been the crowning moment of his career, I think.
You think of the slog of that game and how he just opens things up he's the focal point, Andrew. Gabriel Jesus is not that player. Rafinha, Rodrigo, not that player. Martinelli did one of the few skillful things we saw last night where he nutmegged, I can't remember who it was, but he nutmegged an Argentinian player out on the left-hand side and then skipped past him. And I thought, maybe there's hope for this game. There was not.
Well, the guy who is that player is Vinicius. He can be that player and he's hurt. He's hurt now and will be for a while.
So, I mean, you put it together, maybe that's it. And also, a friend of mine who is married to an Argentinian woman, and she's like, it seems to me that he's down there right now, and he watched it in an Argentinian bar.
Oh,
obviously an Argentinian bar, a bar in Buenos Aires. They're all Argentinian, full of them. But he's down there, and it seems to me one thing: when you marry, you don't marry an Argentinian; you marry their family and everything, and the culture and the football, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And he was just commenting on the difference between, you know, the 86-90 Maradona vintage and the Messi one. And he's suggesting that, and I think he might be right, that there were better players around Maradona, although he was the absolute maverick and the focal point. There was better players with Maradona than there is. And what he described at the current crop, it's Messi plus 10 soldiers. You know, that'll go to battle. I know what you're going to say. Julian Alvarez, McAllister. Okay, but look, there's Otamendi, you know, Romero.
Romero's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought there was something in that. And I don't see too many soldiers in that Brazilian team. Like, just going on last night for the battle, I'm not sure they were there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's been proven. I mean, yeah. They lost. And it's not a good sign for Brazil that Messi could be playing hurt and a total non-factor. Argentina as a whole were not very good in this game.
No, they weren't.
And they still go in there and win? That's not good.
No, it's terrible. It really is terrible.
Let's see, JJ, before we get out here, a couple previews for this weekend. Obviously, domestic play returns across the globe, and it does so with a real bang in the Premier League. Saturday, wake up. Everyone, get the F up at 7:30 a.m. Eastern time. First versus second, top two clubs of this era, City, Liverpool, at the Etihad in Manchester. Enormous game, obviously. Title implications early on here, albeit with this one, as it is number one versus number two in the table. City for this, we'll see. I don't know what the latest news is, but players who are hurt currently, they may be without Ederson, Haaland, Ake, Kovacic, and Nunez. This is, of course, on top of De Bruyne, John Stones, and Sergio Gomez, who are already out with long-term injuries. Boy, I mean, wow. And look, I know Liverpool are without Andy Robertson. They have, you know, they've got their own stuff. But boy, Manchester City, if there's a time for them to be gotten, especially if Haaland isn't playing and De Bruyne is not playing, this could be a moment here.
I think this is the, for all that's gone beforehand, I know the defeat at Tottenham. I mean, that was obviously tainted by everything with the VAR and kind of unprecedented stuff. This is the acid test for Liverpool so far. As we enter into December, we can get a read on them now, a real read on whether they are. This is another Man City Liverpool title race.
I think so,
because I personally think Tottenham are going to finish. Arsenal can push Liverpool, but my gut tells me they're not going to be in a title race. However, they might be if Liverpool prove themselves not to be up to it, and it's so much more for Liverpool because it's new Liverpool. It's a new outfit. It's a reconstructed side over the summer, quicker than they wanted to, and we'll see exactly where they're at against City on Saturday. And I don't care who City are missing. Liverpool have to come out and put a performance in, like a statement of intent. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, Liverpool and Arsenal are both 1 point back currently of Manchester City. Tottenham are two back. Villa are three back. By the way, Tottenham and Villa play on Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern time at Spurs in North London. So a couple big games early on your Saturday and Sunday coming up this weekend. Let's see, MLS conference semifinals. We're back into the postseason here after a little break in this very normal playoff schedule that they have Saturday and Sunday. So here's when the games will be. Saturday, 5:30 at night, two seed Orlando versus number three Columbus Crew, and then the nightcap at 8 o'clock, the top seed FC Cincinnati against the fourth seed Philadelphia Union. Sunday, 7 o'clock p.m. The 4 versus 8, Houston Dynamo versus Sporting Kansas City. Sporting Kansas City, the one surprising team remaining here. And Sunday at 9:30 to finish off the weekend, 2 versus 3. This is a great one. Seattle Sounders and LAFC. Boy, these are all, I kind of love all of these. These are really great. Yeah. I know how we got here, the playoff format, the length of this, whatever, but I do think we've been left with some really intriguing quarterfinals, conference semifinals here. I like these a lot.
Absolutely. Like Orlando City and Columbus Crew, like that's an unbelievable matchup. I fancy the Crew because I think attacking wise they're pretty spectacular, but they will leave themselves open.
Was it just September when they played and Orlando won 4-3? Like that feels like you could see something like that easily happening again.
Yeah, that could be the game to watch. Cincinnati and the Union, I don't see an upset here. It's at home for Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati have been at times, if not always, in the playoffs, scintillating. I think they probably let the Red Bulls hang around a little bit longer than they should have. Well, can they absorb the loss of Matt Miazga? Can the Union, is it a bigger loss, Miazga or I suppose Kai Wagner? I don't know.
And Glesnes, Glesnes obviously still out for the season for the Union. Leon Flack, right, we found out this week, not coming back in the postseason. You're right. The Miazga thing is big too.
He's
MLS's defender of the year. We'll find out. We'll see how absorbable it is. I mean, look, Lucho Acosta is the best player in the league this season. So as long as he's out there, you know, and Brandon Vasquez, the Union are going to be back on their heels. But this one is so interesting just because, like, just the narratives around it. I mean, in a kind of post-Toronto FC world in the East, it's the best team of the era in the Eastern Conference with Philly and the best team easily of this season in the league in FC Cincinnati. We've talked about the crossover between the staffs. Pat Noonan just was named MLS Coach of the Year.
The Ziggy Schmidt Award, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much familiarity between these two group, between these two teams. You know, my guess is the Union will try to slow it down, defend, look to strike on the counter, something over the top to Gazdag, who's been incredible. And, you know, one thing with FC Cincinnati to keep in mind, so they won 14 games this season by one goal. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad. Like, I guess you can write your own story with that. Like, it's good that they know how to grind out close games, which a lot of these are going to be in the playoffs. But is it bad in that, like, how long is that sustainable to live on the edge? I don't know. So I'm fascinated by this. I don't know. I can't call this one at this point, and I won't.
No. Well, you never do. Can I just point your attention to a team that gets so little love and now is going to get a lot of love mm-hmm. over the weekend? The Houston Dynamo. How many false dawns have they had in the last few years? You know, Cab Ramos was coming in. This was, you know, he was the Messiah. Didn't work out at all. And Ben Olsen has come in and he's just kind of revamped it in such short order. And I just want to see, as an experiment, I feel like my gut tells me you can do this pretty quickly in MLS. You can turn the ship around quickly if you now. I'm sure there's fans in Colorado Rapids screaming at me right now saying, no, you can't. But if you do things properly, you can, and Olsen obviously has great experience, you can turn the ship around quickly. Can you turn it all the way to an MLS conference final that quickly?
Well, they're playing the eighth seed. He's gotten them in position, but they're in the quarterfinals KC, and they're significant favorites.
I would like to say that Sporting KC, that eighth seed, there's among their coaching staff, amongst their players, there is quality and there is muscle memory. I don't think that's a true eight, in my view. And then finally, Andrew, like Sunday 9:30, Seattle Sounders, LAFC. So who's going to stop Bouanga? Well, maybe the Sounders are the best team set up to stop that LAFC attack. And again, muscle memory, coaching staff, ability to shut games down and make games difficult. Like, totally playoff ready. I can't call that one. I can't call it. So I think also the nature of these, the one tie, I think this is set up perfectly. This is a great weekend of MLS soccer.
I love it. I think it'll be great. And by the way, there's two doubles on the line here. I mean, everyone's so focused on FC Cincinnati trying to, the more prominent, the supporter shield MLS Cup double. But remember, Houston Dynamo won the U.S. Open Cup. They're playing for a double right now as well, trying to get both MLS Cup and the U.S. Open Cup with them at the same time, which would be a huge achievement. And I would say, you mentioned Ben Olsen. I would direct people to MLSsoccer.com. Jonathan Siegel has a profile on him there, and it's really good. Olsen, it's interesting. He talks in there about how his adaptability as a manager and how he's learned that and how, like, the vision that he sold to ownership when they hired him is not what they're doing. But he said, you want to do a certain thing. You get on the field and you look at your staff and you say, oh, we can't do that. It's really interesting how he kind of opens up on that. It's good stuff. You can see that guy. He says in the piece, he was burnt out. I mean, I think the word he used was, I was cooked. And he took 2 years off, refreshed, re-energized, back with Houston. And he's loving life there. And like I said, they've got a shot for a double. So pretty fascinating. Should be a fun weekend of soccer all around.
Before we get out, and Taylor Twellman, I've only started listening to it because it popped up, but he does an interview with Peter Vermees, Sporting KC Supremo, and some amazing stuff comes up about his former life. He used to work at a Jiffy Lube.
I could see that.
Yeah. You. Now listen, should I be promoting Taylor's podcast when he called it Offside?
That's fine, whatever.
Is it okay? I'm quite bitter about that still.
Yeah,
that's one of those where you listen, lads, I'm launching a podcast, I'm thinking of calling it Offside.
you know, a phone call, just a phone call would have been nice. But
you'd be waiting a long time, I think, for that.
Well, anyway, but listen, go and listen to Taylor's podcast, if not for any other reason, but to show what a massive and wonderful and open person I am that I promote other pods on the on our pod.
There's room for all of these soccer pods.
There is not.
I firmly believe there's room for all of us to exist.
We're going to destroy it. We need an enemy. We've lost all our freaking enemies.
What? I never felt like we had enemies.
This podcast is always, whether it's been Mark,
we're harmless. Wilmot, those kinds of enemies.
No, we need pod enemies as well. We don't have one.
Yeah, I haven't added to my list in years. Oh, it's just been poor Wilmot. Jack Warner sitting there all alone.
Wilmot's is your Newman. Let's be honest about it. Wilmot. Hello, Wilmot.
This was great. Everybody have an awesome Thanksgiving. I can't wait for one of my favorite holidays of the year easily. And then, like we said, the football returns domestically this weekend after a pretty eventful international break. Lots of, like we said, Premier League, great MLS playoff action. Should be a lot of fun. JJ, I enjoyed this immensely. To you, I say...
I want everyone just to drive safely, get to your destination, have a great Thanksgiving, be safe.
I'll see you, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.